everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Comic Book Legion podcast, where we're here to talk DC Comics. I am here. Clay still has his mustache. He's got a Brett Booth, Wally West hair thing going on. He's got like the fro curls going forward. Did you notice that?
I did. I just woke up. So
got it. Wow. So you look like Selleck meets Wally West, Brett Booth version in the morning.
I am matches Malone with Wally West's hair
and a Jim Lee Superman shirt.
Yeah. I bought this last week.
For tomorrow. I love that. I remember back in the day, I think when DC Comics still had a contract with Kia, they used to do, Jim Lee would have his designs, and he had the Batman Hush. You can either get like the Kia Optima, like the sport package, either in Hush or in For Tomorrow. And everything is just decked out Batman or Superman.
That would be awesome nowadays.
You should Google. I mean, I don't think they have a partnership anymore. But when they did, I have never wanted a Kia so much in my life than when I knew that my entire... Yeah, because the car would be... I think the car was going to be... I don't know if it was the entire car or I think it was just the hood. And it was that, like the whole Metropolis skyline. But the car was like that Superman blue.
Oh.
Yeah. Or you had... a black sports, like I think it was the Optima, and then you would have the Batman Hush version cover of him on the gargoyle.
Nice.
And then everything inside, it was glorious. I mean, that was Kia's heyday. But yeah, man, Clay, how you doing? Did I even introduce you?
Well, yeah. I mean, yeah, you said I still have the mustache and, you know, stuff like that. So
okay.
You did introduce me, but you didn't ask me how I was, and you just did. So I'm doing good. I am finally having a, like, solid 2 days off today and tomorrow. I get to get a lot of things done. We're going to record a second separate show episode tomorrow, me and you, which I'm really excited about. And
if I decide to.
Oh man, don't back out now.
I mean, after last night's Slack conversation about this Screen Rant. I mean, we're not going to discuss it, but there's a Screen Rant article that possibly. I mean, it looks legit, but it feels also like it's a speculative piece.
Yeah,
somebody reveals. Yeah, where they reveal the possible identity of who. I was going to say the person's name of who Leviathan is. And I mean, it looks pretty legit. But then
they spent way too much time doing their research. Let me just say that.
Yeah. I mean, hey, kudos, man. If they're going to do it, I'd rather have them do something like that than like some kind of clickbaity thing with no original content. And they're just putting their own opinion out of somebody's, you know, out of context of what somebody said, like they do with the movie stuff. So this at least feels somewhat journalistic. Yeah, man. But yeah, so that article, I mean, that it created us to have some like dialogue, which we never have on the show. I don't know why. Maybe because we're looking at each other. We don't argue and call each other frauds.
I mean,
it was friendly, though. I mean,
yeah, we all do it out of, you know, jokingly and things like that. But I mean, this conversation I have seen happen in our Slack chat and the Weird Science Slack chat, and there is two opposite opinions of where this book is going compared to the two Slack chats that I'm on. And
you have one that's a little bit more hope and optimism, which DC is no longer at the moment. And then you have the extreme cynics. I love you, Jim. I do. And everyone there. Eric, you know, you guys are great. But like that one also. And again, a lot of their points are 100% true. And they are. It's just, it comes down to, do you just want to fall into that or just kind of hope? And yes, it's naive. But I guess in the point, like, I'd rather be naive instead of getting that serious. Because if that's the point, it's really hard to enjoy comics.
I will say what made me laugh the most out of that entire conversation was the random thing that just Kevin came in and was like, man, I missed a lot today. That made me laugh so hard. I don't know why. I mean,
he's made a point to just ignore all of your Bendis slander. So I think that having a conversation, it was, yeah. Because normally, I mean, it gets more touchy when you guys go at it.
We bump heads quite often when it comes to Bendis stuff. So
I mean, I'm okay. I'm
surprised that he hadn't, you know, jumped in sooner, but
no,
you know,
it's all good. You know, it's Bendis. Bendis is a touchy subject right now in just DC Comics as a whole. But let's go into some, well, not necessarily positive, because I don't know what your thoughts are on this book. But we have Aquaman 52, Kelly Sue DeConnick, Robinson Rocha. This is another strong, I mean, I love that. Every time I see now Joshua Middleton's variant covers, which look gorgeous, it just reminds me how so upset I am that Aquaman has these stupid tattoos.
And you know, it sucks even more because we're going to talk a little bit about it today. He has them in Justice League.
Well, I mean it's somewhat in DC's weird continuity that would make sense.
We were trying to decide how far into the future Justice League was, you know, and things like that, and what the time stamp really was between Justice League and Aquaman, because he wasn't there. And so when he comes back, he does have the tattoos. So I think these tattoos are here to stay.
I mean, it's the popularity of the movies. So it's going to, unfortunately, that's a thing. But like I said, Kelly Sue DeConnick, Robson Rocha, Daniel Henriquez, Sonny Gu on colors, and Clayton Cowles on letters. I got to say, I enjoyed this book somewhat. Like,
I am right there with you.
It's one of those that, okay, I'm liking the book. I don't know why I don't like how Kelly Sue is writing Jackson, like, at all.
Nope.
Jackson just feels like a really annoying side character at the moment. I mean, we'll see what happens, because we do know this story begins on how the last one ended with that crazy monster that we have been seeing getting teased around that watchtower. Well, now it's a full-blown battle, and that's exactly what this is. But in the meantime, while Arthur is fighting this monster, Jackson, or Aqualad, however you want to call him, he is responsible for trying to save Ryan. And now, no, Ralph, I'm sorry, Ralph. And Ralph is that little boy that we saw that brought like a cake, I believe it was to Aquaman in the beginning of this arc. And he's just been hanging with them. And of course, he's the one that unfortunately is the collateral damage and ends up dying in this. And it's one of those things where Jackson, while he was doing all his stupid little quirks, he realized, he's like, no, but I saved them. No, you were too late. So, I mean, unfortunately, this little boy passes in this kind of battle, which kind of happens when I'm curious of what that's going to do later on with the people of Amnesty Bay, where, because it did show that they were mourning, but there's got to be an aftermath, especially now with what Black Manta, with the gift that he was given by Lex Luthor, which is this huge mech robot that has the personality of his father. I mean, I'm curious as to what happened. I mean, there was a lot of action. I mean, the action sequences were nice. I mean, I still love the, I guess you could say, like, I like this cast of characters. Like, I'm really starting to like Callie. I think Callie's a cool character. I'm kind of bummed that we got, considering this book only comes out once a month, it's really sad to see that we got nothing of Mera.
Yeah.
Nothing in regards to Mera and Volko. I mean, I don't necessarily need, like, much to happen, but I kind of don't want to go 2 months without seeing her. You know what I mean? So.
Oh, that's true, yeah.
Yeah, so it's one of those things. And now the very end of the book, now you'll have to remind me here, but Arthur, while he's kind of, like, just looking into the sunset, he was introduced. He met a hooded, there's always a guy in a hood, and somebody that's hooded there, and he's kind of just like there, and he's just speaking to Arthur, and he introduces himself as Tristram Maurer. Now, is this, and he mentioned that for 200 years, he, like, this has been, he's been away from his beloved Amnesty. And he's like, I believe you're the one that called me home. Now, what I'm curious is this the person that the cop, you know, when she was saying, like, her story to, like, the New Gods, that he was the Lightkeeper?
So, I was very interested because I got a little bit lost. I didn't read last issue because the last issue was with your episode with Jake. Instead, I just listened to the episode. Still got a lot of information from it. But so I felt a little bit lost with this guy. I was like, oh, was he in the last issue? What's going on? Did they tease him in the last issue? But then I remembered the story that was being told by the cop at that AA meeting.
Okay.
And it does look exactly like him. So I do think he is this man of legend that used to live at the lighthouse. And so he has come back to Amnesty Bay. And I'm interested to see what he meant by, I believe you're the one that called me home. Like, is he like just a part of the ocean now? Like, I don't understand.
Yeah, it looks like he's like, if he's one. But I think he is one with, I don't know, again, if he is one with Amnesty Bay. And now we're going to be getting where, you know how Gotham has its own personality. Metropolis has its own personality. Like, I'm curious, like, Themyscira has its own personality. Oa, like, is Amnesty Bay going to become more than just, you know, a fishing town? Yeah. Like, is it going to become something a little bit more mythological, which is really that's what's interesting. That's what kind of piqued me. I'm like, oh, okay, this is cool. There might be, you know, I think that Kelly Sue is building something with Amnesty Bay being more than just a fisher's town. I like that.
Yeah.
I like the action sequences. I mean, nothing besides this last panel, you know, moved the story going forward, which is kind of, I don't necessarily want to call it a filler. But I feel like these books, a book like this, I don't feel really should happen in a monthly. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I feel like you have more than enough time. But again, we don't know how things are timed, and maybe there's something big happening with Aquaman in 3 months and they just can't do it at the moment. So you need something slow like this. But Jackson, to me, was a huge letdown.
Yeah, you know, I didn't like the fact that she is using him as some sort of comic relief or, like, the upside to a bad situation, because he was talking about, oh, you know, this is the kind of monster that I faced in a video game. Well, you know, I'm gonna fight you with my, you know, +3 water strength or whatever he said. Like, it just got me out of the situation.
Yeah, he was saying, I've fought monsters like this in RPGs, and now he's like, oh, but the good thing is I'm using my 3 like water based characters.
Yeah, he said right here,
he said something in that regard, like water-based
monster. Yeah, I attacked the monster with my +3 water bearers, which is his swords.
Mm.
And he's using it as like a joke.
Well, I found it really weird. I thought that this was his character. I don't know, it just seems really out of place, and he's not bringing anything.
Compared to what Jackson has been. And I know we already said that, like, the stuff in Rebirth doesn't matter anymore and things like that. But when he was on the Titans, when he had a completely different character design, by the way,
mm-hmm.
bald head, you know, he was not acting like this. And then we see him in other senses of media, which being Young Justice, the television show, even as, you know, in the first season, he was not like this. So this is a completely different Aqualad Calder, it's not even Calder, it's Jackson Hyde.
Mm-hmm.
He is being a completely different person from what he is usually, and so I just feel like it's very odd.
Yeah, and I think that maybe we're gonna get more of the Jackson that we're looking for when, you know, him and Black Manta, father and son, finally meet up again. We'll have to see what goes on in that regards. But I would say it's like this issue was a like it, not love it, but a good read. Well, not even a good read. It was entertaining because of the action sequences, but yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Like it, didn't love it. Well, Batman 79. So we got a double deuce of just the Batcat romance. You know, sexy time on the beach. Clayman, Tom King, Tomer Morey. What did you think of this one?
I enjoyed it, except for one page that ruined it all.
Man, one page can ruin everything that quickly? Jeez. All right. Go ahead. Let me know okay. what.
So, well, let's talk a little bit about the issue. Of course, we see Matches Malone and Selena Kyle here on this island, still training, enjoying each other's company. We get to see Catwoman or Selena punch the crap out of a creep. We get a little.
It's actually important to note that this, because the editor didn't mention this in the last issue, or at least I didn't see it, that this actually takes place before Batman 77.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So that plays into the one page that kind of ticks me off.
Okay.
So we see Selena Kyle punch the crap out of a creep that, like, touched her. We get a little seductive time with Selena and Bruce. We see them get back in their costumes, save some people, kick some butt. That's all nice. We have this beautiful one-page spread of a yacht, and they're on jet skis.
Okay.
Like, that page altogether, like, almost made the page before it. Like, the page before it, that's the one that pisses me off, but we'll talk about that in a second. The way Clayman draws water and the way Tom Murray just colors it mm-hmm. is absolutely amazing. I absolutely love it. They are stopping a shipment of venom that's going into Gotham, or that is on its way to Gotham,
mm-hmm.
which makes me think, you know, it has been, I would say, I don't know when the introduction of Bane was. I think it was, which book was it? I think it was like a one shot where Bane came in for the first time, but I think it's been like 60, 40 years or so.
Mm-hmm.
Why hasn't Bane made a method to make it in-house and he still has to have it shipped?
Because, like, he's all about organic. He goes green, literally. I don't know, man.
I'm just saying, like, this is 2019. Like, come on now. Come on. Like, people are making, like, and I don't condone this, listeners. People are making meth in their backyard. Like, come on. You know? So.
Wasn't Breaking Bad in Texas?
It was in New Mexico.
Ah, okay. Man, it's been so long. I don't remember where it was placed at.
But then we see Matches and Selena again near the end. They're really talking about how, you know, Bruce is talking about how when they first met, he was not yet Batman. He was still fighting for justice and, you know, for justice of Gotham, but he hadn't really grabbed the name Batman yet.
Did you notice that when he was saying that, the way that the sun looked, it kind of looked like the Omega?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. I saw it a little bit.
Like, I didn't know if that's, like, I mean, I don't think that, I mean, I don't think that he's going to do anything with Darkseid, but it's just, it's one of those things I'm like, I can kind of see, like, that's how the sun can kind of look when you know it's starting to set.
Yeah.
And that little part, but I'm like, I just can't help but see the, you know, the Omega symbol. That's why.
But, you know, and then he says, you know, on the boat when we met, that was when I was Batman. So technically, they basically agree that they are both right, that it was both on the street and on a boat, but majorly on a boat, because that's when he had fully found out who he was. And then at the very end, they're like, you know, Catwoman says, holy, bleep, Bane is in trouble now.
Yeah.
Now let's go all the way back to the part that really ticked me off.
So you're upset because it looks like Bruce is the one that made this plan?
Yes, but here's the thing. It is just like this arc with Selena and Bruce, what we said last issue, it is wrongly placed. Right here, we see the very first panel on this page. It says, Alfred signaled he's safe. I'm sending Damian in. So right there, that ticked me off because I didn't want to know that until after we see a little bit of aftermath of what's coming next in Gotham with Damian and Alfred. If we
well, I mean, seen... well, I mean, but there's nothing else to know about.
But
Alfred,
I'm saying, because now we have to assume that whoever was in that chair was either Clayface or just a dummy or a sacrifice.
Or it could be the case that that wasn't actually Alfred.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
No. I'm saying that this is just another way of Bane telling, you know, Alfred, like, tell Master Bruce that you're fine. Because, I mean, we've been seeing Alfred acting really weird. So it could just be that Alfred was doing what Bane was having him do. Or since he was hostage, Bane could have sent the message.
I would hate that even more.
So for all that we know, this is like, when I read that, I was like, oh, wow. So clearly they used Alfred to let him know that he's safe. And now it explains why the hell was Damian in such a mission? Even though we've known that he's been angry, he came this time. There was issues in the past. It was more like just, you know, like doing recon work. This time he actually went for blood, and it looks like it's because of Bruce's. So now I'm like, man, what's going to be Bruce's mentality when he realized that he's the reason why this happened?
So you still think it's gonna
stick? I mean, I'm thinking. Well, I've been saying that I believe it's a swerve, but I mean, we have no evidence to show that it's a swerve. So all I can go by is like, oh man, I think that before we actually get to 85, I think that Bane's gonna have one more twist. You know, like that one more, because it can't just be that Bruce is gonna come back and he purely dominates Bane. We have 6 more issues. So it has to be where there's going to be one more, like, trial that Batman kind of has to overcome. And could it be possible that what he needs to overcome is knowing that he was, you know, Bane tricked him, and he's the reason now that Alfred is dead because he sent in Damian?
I, like, because this seems like it's such a, like, oh, this is what really happened type of panel. And like or explanation, however you want to look at it, I feel like I'm gonna be really upset if Alfred is still dead. Like,
oh, I mean, so, yeah, I mean, it's gonna suck. And so, Tom King, you know, boo you. But I mean, it again,
because all I'm saying is because if this is what it is intended to be, as in like, hey, Alfred is safe, Damian's gonna go in. We're going to play this ruse, and then we're going to go in and kick everybody's ass, you know? If it was going to be like that, I would have much rather have seen, you know, the reveal of Alfred being safe first, and then have this small little page, you know, saying,
if he is safe, I prefer it like this. Because then, if I look at it that way, I'm like, we saw he was died, we had 2 issues to process it, and now we're knowing from Batman, dude, even though Batman is gone, he's still, like, dude, this is, like, the plan. That could totally be Clayface. I'm like, hell yeah. So even in his worst, when he was broken and needed to be brought up, Batman is still on his game where he was thinking ahead, and this could be a Clayface kind of thing where Bane thinks he actually has him and Batman actually has him where he wants him, where now he's coming in and Bane thinks that he has the upper hand when he reveals that Alfred is dead, and Batman's going to be like, nah, man, this is, like, you know, joke's on you. And then this was, so no matter what, my thing is, if it's true and it's Alfred, freaking A, like, I'm going to be pissed. Then I feel that I have no idea what Bat and Cat's going to be about. Well, besides us seeing like Mask of the Phantasm, it's going to be like this huge love triangle kind of thing going on. But I still don't know what's going to happen. What's the life-changing thing? I'm still waiting on that. So I don't know. For me, I can see Alfred signaled he's safe two ways. Yo, he's not dead. This is what an awesome plan that Bane thinks he has him. Or I can be like, damn, freaking Batman. Bruce is the reason why Alfred is dead. So I can see it either way. I mean, that's how I'm taking it.
Yeah, for sure.
But if you want to be, you know, negative Nancy, that's okay.
I just, like, those big reveals, I would much rather get them, like, on the top of hype. So, like, for me, I would much rather have it to where, like, Batman is in Gotham, he's kicking Bane's ass, and then Bane's like, oh, by the way, and, like, they show, like, a dead Alfred, and then you just see Batman be like, nah. And then, like, it shows a flashback of Batwoman and Batman right there in the island having that conversation, and then you're like, what? Like, because it's in the middle of the fight, it's in the middle of all this hype, and so that makes it a little bit more like, oh my gosh. Because see, here is just like, wait, what? You're a little confused, you're a little, you know, I guess stirred up with, you know, everything that's going on the island. It's, you know, smooth sailing with Catwoman and Batman.
I mean, I feel like we're still gonna get a situation like that. This at least, so. This just gives you in between time to, because it's all about having a conversation. So if we are like, oh, Alfred's dead, okay, well, we had a week to process it, like it doesn't matter anymore, da da da, like we just got to figure out like what's gonna happen when that time comes. Having a little nugget like this, I mean, you saw it one way, and I can see it two different ways. So I think that it allows conversation in between. So then when that time comes, it can either be glorious, awesome, or it can suck balls.
Yeah.
So, but
the book is pretty. That we were both, the book that we were both excited about because of, ironically, the last page. Flash forward number one.
Flash? This was a, I don't know why, but I was, when I was looking at the flash forward, because I, you know, I'm getting, I get the variant, I get the DC, like the B covers. I love knowing that the whole DC, all the title work and stuff is not really shown. So I get to just enjoy the art for what it is. I completely forgot that flash forward has a little bit of a Heroes in Crisis tie-in. For some reason, even though I know that this is literally coming out and Wally West is a big part of that. I don't know why. It didn't dawn on me until you see a lot of these flashbacks here. But this one is, I guess you could say it's a great read, and I thoroughly enjoyed reading it. The one thing is that I never read Sideways. I only read number one. So like,
yeah, neither did I.
So like the Fugonauts, like who this Tempest is. I mean, it's kind of hard for me to, you know exactly what he is, and I think that Lobdell does a decent job of kind of explaining who the Fugonauts are and like what, you know, what they're about, and they're pretty much to ensure the integrity of space between the worlds of the multiverse. So they have a pretty big job, and I find that, I was like, oh man, this is actually kind of cool, because
if people are more I guess relatable to Marvel, this would be the, I guess, equivalent to a Watcher.
Yeah.
In a little bit more of an extreme, because it's the multiverse and not necessarily the universe. Because, right, isn't Watchers, they're not on a multiversal level?
Dude, you're talking to me about specific nuances in Marvel?
Well, apparently.
I mean, apparently I'm a Marvel stan, because
yeah,
I don't like how Black Mask is, how he looks in that poster. So, yeah, Marvel, oh, I love you guys. Funny. Yeah, like freaking amen. Lit.
But keep going.
Yeah, so it looks like he has been he that Tempest is having like the struggle. There's a struggle. There's going on. Somebody is kind of like messing with it, which is not something that normally happens. And he's trying to find, I guess you could say, the source. And when he is getting into that source of where exactly is breaking within the multiverse, he realizes that there's a hero, and that he needs the he actually proclaims like that the multiverse needs a hero. And he might be the last person anyone would dare to expect. And then that leads us to Sanctuary. And the first thing, of course, that they do is the first guy that they show in the is Roy Harper. And I was like, oh, Roy. Yeah. So you get Roy Harper and Wally, and you're kind of getting their banter. And it was kind of funny banter in regards to the milk. And I'm like, dude, this is from, like, NARC. This is, like, really, like, old. He's like, all right, well, then sour milk is... You know, okay, it's worse than, I think he says, like, it can't be worse than this therapy. And he's like, but what doesn't kill us? I was like, oh, you bastard. Like, that was, now, the one thing I will say, though, is I don't know why. Maybe it's been a while that I've seen Brett Booth and Norm Ratman on art, on the colors, work together. But I don't know why. I felt like Brett Booth kind of either his style evolved or they used a little bit different coloring.
I think they have used a little bit different coloring, because I also felt that this Brett Booth, as far as art, wasn't as slick as his normal stuff usually is. Because when
but let me preface it by saying that I like it.
Yes.
Okay. This is a positive.
This Brett Booth compared to Brett Booth on Titans in the beginning of Rebirth, colors aren't as shiny. So I think that's the big thing. Or at least they're not as vibrant. These are very matte. And so it's very, you know.
And it could be on purpose because of Wally's frame of mind. Yes. Like where he is. So it makes sense. Now, I have to say that you on the Slack chat, on like the we have a spoiler chat and we kind of just talk with other contributors and stuff, and you guys were talking about this, and I believe it was Kelly, and she mentioned that she wasn't digging the book because she doesn't want to have a story where it's all like cosmic. She wanted a story where it hits more in regards to the ramifications and get more into the psychological.
Yes.
And I felt, I'm like, I thought that this book did a pretty good job at that. Because the entire intro that we saw of Wally was him dealing with that and dealing with what he's done and how he's coping with it. And now you see him in his present situation with him putting on the power dampeners because he is scared of his own powers. And now because it was because Iron Heights. Wait, was it Ironheart? Yeah, because Ironheart was destroyed in like the flashbooks, he is now in Blackgate, which, you know, there he's got quite a bit of his own rogues galleries.
When comparing the Blackgate to Ironheart, like let's just, it is like the Metropolis jail compared to freaking Arkham Asylum, basically. Those are two separate, different...
I mean, this is like where you would find Cyrus the Virus from Con Air.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, basically.
That's my 90s reference for today.
I actually love that movie, by the way.
It's one of those movies that are so bad that it's pretty amazing. That, like, the most dangerous guy in the entire plane is, like, Steve Buscemi. And he's, like, singing, I think it was, like, This Little Light of Mine.
Yeah.
Jenny. God, I love that movie. Anyways, so yeah, here
Lord Dave Chappelle. You know, the big thing with this was I was down the very first part of the book.
The Tempest part?
No. The Wally West in Blackgate.
Okay.
And the reason why it was Wally beating himself up. And I'm just like, oh man, this is supposed to be a redemption arc. I know that we're supposed to learn or supposed to have a recap of what happened, you know? But I'm just like, man, this guy is just not letting up with beating himself up.
It doesn't hurt when Linda comes.
Oh, dude. And when she showed up, like, I had honestly thought that DC had completely forgot that they had ever met, mm-hmm. because that was in the very beginning of Rebirth.
Yeah.
The DC Universe number one, and the very beginning of Titans. So to see her, it crushed my heart a little bit.
I was actually curious on the B cover, who was that? And
was
now,
that her?
I'm guessing, I mean, because Linda, you know, in this part of
Yeah,
I was like, man, who is that? Like, who's this mysterious character and what role does she play? And I'm like, oh man, is that Linda Park? Now that when you're, you know, you're looking at the book, and it was the part that was tough is first I saw Linda and I'm like, oh my God, she's back. And then what hit me was another time, another reality. She was my wife, mother of my children. I'm now told our children never existed. You wonder why I'm losing it. And I was like, dang. So it's like, not only responsible, 13 people killed. Not only was it that he framed people so that he can kind of figure things out. Not only did he leak, you know, personal recordings. It's also now he's seeing like all his memories. That's my wife. I recaptured these memories of my children thanks to Zoom, but I'm now told that they never exist, but now they feel so real to me. I mean, yeah. Freaking A, man.
And the thing is, and the worst part of this is ever since for 3.5 years now, Linda has basically denied Wally as, you know, ever knowing her or knowing him or whatever.
Yeah.
And there was a point where they were going to start talking, but that went away as soon as the Titans book went away. And so there was never any rekindling or anything. And so right here, when he says, you came, and then the very first thing she says is, I'm a reporter. I'm doing my job. And I'm like, oh, it wasn't even to go see him. It was just like, hey, I'm here to do my job.
I don't even care. The fact is that they brought her. Like, I don't even care if she was there for the reason. If there's dialogue and there's possibilities, I feel like there's something that can be done there.
I know, but it's just like one more thing to just crush you, you know? Like, hey, I know that you have all these feelings for me, and I know that you said we have this past, but today I'm just a reporter. So
I mean, I feel like if she didn't really want to come, she could have just passed that on, the story to someone else.
That's true. That's
true. So now
we get a random little tidbit, which I'm sure will play a bigger part in future issues. But what did you think of the Mobius chair?
When I saw this Thor-looking Hawkman, which, I mean, I don't know. I loved his helmet. Because I know nothing of Tarkle, of Edia 12, and I don't think you really need to. I think that they were just creating somebody that we know can kind of present to those who don't know about the Mobius chair. Because the last time we know about the Mobius chair, Metron was a hold of it. And then during the Darkseid War, then Batman, for a short time, became a new god. And that's when he was able to ask some certain questions. Where I'm hoping, I mean, Jason Fabok is still teasing it, so I know that we're still getting a Three Jokers story. I just don't know when. So, I mean, when I don't hear from Fabok anymore, I'll feel like it's dead. But I don't know, man. I thought that it was very interesting to see this chair show up, because the first thing that I thought of is, wow, they're going to turn Wally into a new god. And Wally's gonna be the new helm of the Mobius chair. And I think that due to him kind of being the start of the rebirth, I feel like he would be the one that would, and being stuck in the Speed Force, I feel like he would be, like in the time stream, I feel like he would be the one that would know which questions would be the right ones to answer. Because clearly you saw by him that not everybody can helm the chair.
Yeah.
And man, I forgot his name already. Who cares? Tarkle? Right when he sat on the chair, he immediately died. Because that chair, I mean, just knowledge and truth and everything is just too much for certain people to handle. And I think that somebody that has the Speed Force in him is powerful. I think that he is one of those. And I think with all the knowledge that he will learn throughout this arc, I would be like, man, if there's somebody that I would want, I would be very curious to know all answers that he's curious, would be somebody that has gone through everything since, you know, pre-Flashpoint to now, would be Wally West. Like, I think that he would ask the right questions, especially when all the hurt that he's going through right now, you would think, I mean, it's been promised, but not everything that's promised gets delivered, that this is a redemption. So I want to know, in his redemption, what would be the questions that he would ask? So if that's the case, I'm down with that. I'm cool. If it's done right, of course.
It hurts me because knowing that if this is where it's going, if he's going to be in the Mobius chair, we're not going to see a whole lot of him. And I don't want that to really happen, you know?
In that regards, yeah. Like, it's... See, what's hard with me is... I mean, I think I've mentioned this before. Maybe, like, on Nation of Nerds. Like, I've watched the animated stuff, but I've never seen it religiously. So, like, okay. Wally West is not my Flash. You know what I mean? And when I got to... When I started reading DC, like, around 2005, 2006... I think Johns or somebody was writing a Wally West, but since I was so new
to... It was the return of Barry by that point.
Yeah, it was like just a little bit after was the Flash rebirth, and it was like the, you know, bringing in Barry Allen and what was his place. So to me, Barry Allen is like my Flash.
Yeah.
And it's just like the little bit that I know of Wally, I always saw him kind of like as a sidekick, but I was never really interested in the Flash character. I was more, the books that I loved reading was more like Green Arrow, like reading Judd Winnick, and then of course Jeff George. Yeah, then Jeff Johns started doing like Green Lantern. Like that was kind of, so Flash really didn't become a thing for me maybe until like the Flashpoint story, even though I knew about him because obviously Justice League, but I didn't really care for Flash. So Wally doesn't have for me what he means to a lot of people. So me knowing like, okay, the more that I have grown to know. Now, let me say, I have read all the stuff of Jeff Johns, Mark Waid. I've read all the Wally West stuff. And now I love Wally. Like, I truly do. But Barry is still my guy. So to see him get to a point where, man, if he's a new god, is it a bummer that you don't see him as much? Sure. But knowing that, you know, his role has expanded to such a greater length, it's kind of a cool thing, too. But I guess it all depends. And I don't see it being so permanent. I mean, it could be as simple as... I mean, based on time-wise, how many issues is Flash Forward supposed to be?
This is going to be a 6-issue miniseries.
Six. Is it biweekly?
I don't believe so. I think it's monthly.
Oh, because if it's monthly, that goes against what I'm saying. But I was like, if this is every 2 weeks, now, then this would end.
It could be, though.
Because if this is every 2 weeks, that this is ending literally right now, we're recording September 18th, like 3 months from when Doomsday Clock is being solicited. So, I mean, if it is, there could be something. There could be. But again, I don't know. So it could be very short-lived where, I mean, they've been teasing Wally and Doomsday Clock. There has to be something. And I don't know if it's only going to be that little tidbit that we got in last issue with Lex Luthor. And we saw that really cool rebirth moment between him and Barry. Like, how can I ever forget you? Yeah. So I don't know. I think there's something there that it could just be specifically just for Doomsday Clock.
I just want something like... The more and more I think about it, just, you know, with watching Young Justice, with reading what has happened to Wally now, who Wally used to be, Wally just doesn't have a good track record these days. And I know it's because, you know, Barry is everybody's flash now. He's in the spotlight. But it does suck for somebody to have such a spot, like, in the just, like, he, this kid grew up to be Flash. Like, it wasn't that he just became the Flash. He was Kid Flash. Then he was like, well, I don't want to be Kid Flash anymore. You know, and Barry is dead. I need to step up and
I mean, he's the epitome, him and, like, Dick Grayson are the epitome of legacy characters.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And so, and it just hit me with the stuff that's going on with both of those characters to be where they are now. It does suck. And I hope that Dick Grayson does have a redemption story, or not even a redemption story, but a story that, you know, brings him back up, just like Wally is in here.
I will say that I think all this is going to change in December.
I really hope so.
I think January, with things going back to monthly, we're going to be getting very soon, probably, because we just finished getting the December solicits, right? What solicits? Yes. Okay. So I think that before the next solicits, we're going to get big DC news.
We will get big DC news.
When's New York Comic Con?
Yeah, the first weekend of October.
Okay. That is when I believe that they're going to blow the doors down. What's going to be the new? We're going to get the new Batman writer. We're going to get all that. Mm-hmm. And with DC going monthly, you're going to know. I hope that it's not going to be those spoiled things where it kind of spoils what Doomsday Clock is. But there's going to be, that's what it's all going to be. And I think that we're going to be getting a lot of that kind of stuff, like with Rebirth, where they just teased every title with every creative team. I feel like we might get something in that regards. So I will say, for those that are really hurting, I mean, I'm not hurting, but I gave up on Nightwing, like the book, because I can't read this Rick Grayson thing. Like, I don't care for what this is. I don't like, you know, the Nightwings and stuff like that.
I will say, people were saying that the story or the arc that's going on now with Talon brought a new type of tone to the book, so I wanted to check it out. Okay. I did read this week's issue.
Is this still Juergens?
Yes.
Okay.
This issue, unfortunately, doesn't really move anything forward. It's just, you know, establishing, you know, the I guess risks and everything that's going on with Talon being involved, and so this issue isn't really the one that I would say, oh yeah, this is how I know there's going to be a change. But the two or three beforehand is what gets it a little bit more hyped, a little bit, because it does involve the offer with Lex Luthor. He offered it to the Talon, which happens to be Dick Grayson's grandfather. So it is very interesting, and I would like to see what comes from it. And there is this rumor, and it hasn't been confirmed yet, but a possibility that his influence from his grandfather will actually turn him into a villain, being a Talon. That I would not be too gung-ho for, but if there was some sort of redemption afterward, like Wally is getting here, I think it might be worth it.
Yeah, I think all this stuff is temporary, and I will say that I believe that the end game is the end of the year. And I think that you're going to get more of what you want, or hopefully by January with the new monthly slate and all that kind of stuff.
And if I don't, I'm coming for you, Mark.
Okay.
Don't make promises you can't keep.
Jeez, man, that's so dangerous, man. Yeah, but overall, I mean, I thought that this book
we haven't even talked about the ending of this book yet, though.
Oh no, that was the part that I loved, because after Wally left Linda, which was actually really sad because she was still talking and he kind of just darted off. So even with the dampener on, it looked like he was still able just to, you know, shoot off. He gets attacked by, of course, Girder and Tar Pit. So these are just two of the rogues that we are so accustomed to seeing, especially fighting the Flash. And he was getting his butt kicked, of course, because he had that, because damn he had the damn there. But what the villains, you know, didn't realize is that by them smashing his head onto the floor consistently, well, that broke the dampener and he was able to handle them really quickly, which brings us to Wally meeting up with Tempest. So it looks like Tempest was able to get to where he needed to with his rod and like break into this. And it's kind of funny that it happened to Wally, because this is something that Flashes do to everybody, where they kind of just go through the time stream and they kind of just interrupt like what's going on there. And it just so happens that this happened to a Wally. I don't know why I found that kind of humorous. But there he is, and he explains what is happening right now in the multiverse and the damage that's going on, and that they need the fast... I think he even said it. Like, I need... Like, we need the fastest being, I believe he said, in all the universe to save the world affected by this cataclysm and ultimately destroy the anomaly that is causing it all. So... with that, he was able to, you know, Wally did the normal, like, man, with everything that I've done, you don't know what I've done. I am not worthy of this. I am not a hero. And of course, he gets smacked by that cosmic rod looking thing where he ends up giving Wally his suit back. And I mean, man, Brett Booth draws a beautiful Wally West. And he goes like,
Wally was like,
this clothes represents something that I never wanted to see them again. And he's like, well, all will be made clear. Good journey, Wally West. And Wally's like, no, like it can't stop. Like, where are you going? He's like, I'm not going anywhere. You're the one going. And the first place that we get brought to, which I was talking to a friend of mine that I know through text message. I'm like, listen, man, I can't talk about the book at all, but I'll just say buy Flash Forward number one, because this involves a character that is very... well, not only a character, but an Earth that's like important to him, since he's loved his favorite. Like, he's still waiting for Multiversity number two. Like, that's like the multi. I like, dude, I don't think that book's ever coming out, but he loves the multiverse. Like, the multiverse is like that's his realm. And Wally West gets introduced to President Superman. We got Wally in Earth 23. And I mean, you got really pumped because you were like, Earth 2 is back.
Yeah. Like, I got super excited. I was like, oh my God, Earth 2. And then you reminded me, hey, wrong Earth. And I was like, what? I was like, oh snap, you're right. Yeah, like, switch. Yeah.
Yeah. So this is Earth 23. Now, I'm hoping that we get Earth 2, because we keep on seeing so many hints of Earth 2, Earth 2, Earth 2. So when Tempest was actually talking to Wally and he mentioned that there is an Earth that just refuses to die, I don't know if he was talking about Earth 23 with President Superman, or maybe those are just like little hints, and I'm hoping that there's Earth 2, because I know that there's a huge fan base that loves Earth 2. So I am one of those. I mean, because I want to see Power Girl and Hunter. I want to see these characters again, you know? So I'm hoping that Earth 2 does become one of those journeys. But it looks like for issue 2, we are definitely getting Wally West, President Superman, Earth 23. Bring it on.
I really hope this is bi-weekly, just so we can see this story faster. Like, this reveal at the end got me super excited. You know, seeing any part of the multiverse with Superman characters always gets me excited. There was a small arc, and I believe it was in the Superman run of Rebirth, where he got to team up with all the Supermans of the multiverse, and that got me excited. That was just a really fun story. It had some consequences at the end, but it was still a very good and fun story to read. So having Wally run through the multiverse... and have interactions like this, I'm going to be super excited for it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, 100%. So let's do something that we have a lot of trouble doing, Clay, which is not talking so much. So luckily for us, I did not have the chance to read yet Justice League 32, and you did not have the chance to read Super, well, or you refuse to read. that's a better phrasing. Superman 15. So why don't you briefly talk a little bit about Justice League 32, like your likes, your dislikes. I'll do the same for Superman 15, and then we can kind of wrap it up with Year of the Villain, Lex Luthor.
All right, so Cliff Note version of Justice League number 32. Of course, this was a Snyder and Tynion book. It had Porter on art with Hi-Fi on colors, with a beautiful Capel variant cover. Absolutely love it. This book.
Who's Capel?
Did you ever read Mark Millar's Magic Order?
Yes.
The guy who did the art for that.
Oh, Oliver Coipel. Coipel.
Coipel, okay. Yeah,
oh, yeah.
Sorry. But yeah, that's who the variant cover is. I've already said this on the Slack. I wasn't too impressed by this book. Unfortunately, I think it's just the... Because you can very much tell when a book is written by both Snyder and Tynion,
mm-hmm.
because the personalities of characters clash.
They clash, but they feel also a little bit more bland.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's what happened with the majority of this book. It was very quippy. There was just very cheesy dialogue in a lot of this stuff. And of course, some of it had to do with, you know, it being placed in the 40s. So I can, you know, forgive some of that. But then there was just some that were almost cringeworthy. So it was a little bit harder to read. We did deal with, of course, the, what were they called? The Legion of, the Justice Legion or
the
whatever.
The Justice Legion.
That was being controlled by Brainiac.
Yeah.
The Justice League, well, the Trinity really, fought against them and were able to, you know, get them, you know, out of the control of Brainiac. But at the same time, Brainiac's technology is just way too overpowering. And so he became the Brainiac 1 million, which Jesus. Looked really cool.
I'm skimming through while you're talking. I mean, he kind of looks like a Terminator.
Yeah, that's exactly what I thought of when I first read this. But there was a lot of cringy dialogue with that, because at one point when they were fighting, I believe Superman was like, the people of the Justice Legion were saying, oh, you know, this almost feels like a family reunion. We're, what did they say? They said, we're descendants of you. And then Superman was like, well, everybody knows that it isn't a family reunion without a couple of fights. And I'm just like, I don't like this at all.
Oof.
And like I said, just cringy dialogue. We see Aquaman show up in the middle of the 1940s with John and Flash. Finding out that it was, of course, the Anti-Monitor that placed them there to help them. And then at the very end, Perpetua and Lex Luthor meet the Anti-Monitor in the middle of the, or at the end of the universe. And then you find out, hey, you know what? I didn't come here. I didn't come to the end of the universe to help you, Mother. I have come to stop you. The Anti-Monitor sides with Justice. Now, brothers, let's bring her down. And, of course, you see the World Forger. You see the Monitor. You see Starman. You see Hawkgirl.
I got to say that's not the reveal that I wanted to see with Anti-Monitor. It didn't feel cool at all. No, I mean, again, I have read it. But looking at the pictures, there didn't seem to be, like, a good buildup.
You know, we already saw the Anti-Monitor with Aquaman before.
Yeah.
And so it was a little bit of a letdown there. I thought there was going to be a little bit more of a grand entrance in the middle of a fight, you know, at the end of this arc or whatever with the Anti-Monitor. So when I read this, it was very disappointing, unfortunately.
I mean, even this part right here, like, I did not come to the end of the universe to help you, Mother. I have come to stop you. The Anti-Monitor sides with, like, that sounds cheesy.
Yeah.
And it doesn't like even sound like the anti-monitor. Like it, so I don't know. Like this right here, I don't know. It's
I just feel like right now the monitor, anti-monitor, the world forger, Snyder or Tinian or the combination of both have made them humanized so much that they have lost their personalities of who they were before. And I think they need to be those people in order to defeat Perpetua. And so it just questions, are they still going to win at the end of this?
We'll have to see. But, I mean, based on what I'm seeing here, it looked more like this was, I know they're giving credit to both, but this looks more like Snyder plot Tinian script.
Yep.
The Howard Porter art, it's always nice to see him, like especially like doing the little minor JSA stuff. But I will say that it was definitely missed seeing, or at least I missed seeing like George Jimenez, because I think Jimenez he's like set up like a really good niche on this book, and I kind of missed that. But let's jump into Superman 15. Superman 15. It looks like this is from the very beginning of Man of Steel introducing Rogel Czar. I mean, everything since the first issue of Superman, it's been called the Unity Saga. And it looks like the Unity Saga left, it pretty much was leading us to this specific issue. And what this issue is of course, Jonathan getting ready to make the decision. Is he going to be, like, this is after the offer of being part of the Legion of Superheroes. And they wanted to talk. I mean, there were some, I mean, I can see where you would probably be annoyed by dialogue purposes where it looked like Brainiac brought them like 5 minutes too early. So they were here celebrating this huge day and none of the High Elders have made the decision yet if they were actually going to unite. So you just have all the Legion people kind of giving the banter. Like, freaking A, dude. Like, are you serious? Did we end up coming here in this moment and the moment hasn't even happened? Like, did we possibly ruin things? So, I mean, it's comical. Like, it wasn't done, like, in a forceful way. But what actually happened with him screwing things up, it let the Elders know that it actually worked. That this moment here brought them to this moment where, yes, they worked in unity and it was successful, and now the cosmos and everything and all these planets are better off for it, from what we know. So they decided unanimously, because Saturn Girl was talking to Jonathan telepathically, and she's like, I just wanted to let you know that this came out unanimous. So your idea, everyone loved. So Superman was kind of giving like, hey, what are you going to call this day? The day, I mean, him calling it Unity Day doesn't sound cool at all. Like, Unity Day sounds stupid. But it gives you that, like, oh, man, so Unity Saga was all for this. Bringing all the nations back together so that we never have another Krypton mistake again. So that's why I was like, okay, I don't think it needed to take Bendis a year or so to get to it. But I thought that it was like, okay, cool. Like, this part is, this whole buildup is like, it's wrapping up. I'm like, oh, so this is a wrap-up issue. So you're getting those moments. You're getting, I was kind of curious why Adam Strange was talking to Superman, and now we kind of know why. It's because they need to discuss what's going on with Jor-El. And, you know, it's like, hey, Jor-El, he's right now in pretty much like in trial for pretty much breaking every law of science and everything possible that you could do. Like, he broke it to kind of get to like where he was at, so he has to pay for that. But before they were even able to, like, Clark was able to at least see his father or talk to the Elders, like, the decision has been done, and the decision was to bring Jor-El back to when, like, I guess, like, the time relapse where he ended up leaving Krypton to get to where he was, like, on this, you know, on this time of the day. So he was back to when Krypton was about to get destroyed, and you actually see Jor-El now, like the Mr. Oz looking Jor-El, and the Jor-El there hugging Laura, and he just wanted to let that younger Jor-El, before he got sucked in, to know that everything was okay, and that, you know, Clark did it, Cal did it, and, you know, it was done. So it's kind of like those moments you're like, oh man, it was a bummer to see, but it was also, I guess, nice to, I guess you could say, hear from your future self, know that the decision that you and your wife did was not in vain, and it was great. And it also, for those who are like me, and I think like you, I think you might not like the execution, but I like to know that Jor-El's gone. And it's at least more, in a sense of...
I hope he doesn't come back.
I mean, well, he shouldn't. And I think that this was the point of like kind of bringing him, and this is maybe Bendis's way of fixing, because we know DC continuity right now is all over the place. We're not getting anything that we promised in the beginning. And I know you were kind of mentioning, well, this is kind of a bummer. Why did he have these people in the prisons in the beginning of Rebirth? And I'm like, dude, that doesn't matter. That part of DC is so far away that this was Bendis's way of wrapping up a part that we were never going to get and at least closing it. And I appreciate that we at least have it closed, because then who knows how long that has been in your head. Like, dude, are we ever going to get to this? Well, I mean, this at least gives you closure. If you like it or not, you have the closure. I mean, you get these moments between Superman and Zod that it's weird because you've never seen them like this, where it kind of seems like they're allies with differences. But all of this and everything that Zod has witnessed about Clark, about the family, about what they just finished doing with this Unity Day, it looks like it's given Zod a clarity that he's been wrong, and that he understands that there's something bigger here, and what he actually wants to grow is maybe we can learn from our mistakes and be able to build Krypton anew. And there's a part where you see Clark mention, well, it's like, don't abuse it. And he's like, what, my power? He's like, no, don't abuse Krypton, like the name of Krypton, like what it means, what it represents. And to me, I was like, ooh, I wonder. Okay, I go two ways. I find it interesting, but I can see where I don't know where you are in the Superman story, but we've already had a new Krypton story written by James Robinson. When Superman left Earth to go to this Krypton again, and mainly because Zod was the one in charge of it, and he wanted to give up being Superman for a while, Mon-El.
Wait. Are you saying that Bendis is gonna write that story again?
I'm saying that could be a possibility.
Oh, okay, because that doesn't sound like something Bendis would do, right? Right? Right. He wouldn't possibly do something that's already been done before.
I mean, it's not like he's revealing Superman's identity in December. So, I mean, yeah. Anyways, yes, it does feel like... So that's what I'm saying, like, it could be... Where, man, are we going to get a new Krypton? But maybe we're getting a good Zod? Or at least...
I hope we get retcon in January.
Or an anti-hero... Nah, man, this seems like it's going to be... This stuff seems... I feel like Bendis is like the influence right now. I know you're not liking it, but I just feel like that's what it is. Because I don't feel like they would do this. Something like this and do the identity stuff. Just to retcon it. Unless that's a total cash grab for December. He's revealing his identity! Sells 300,000 copies and then Doomsday Clock retcons it all.
I hope this is retconned by January.
Which part? The Krypton whole, stuff?
The whole Zod and Superman being buddy-buddy.
I don't know if it's a buddy-buddy. I feel it. I don't think you feel it either. I think you're just being sarcastic. But it at least felt a little bit more of like a mutual... I don't know if like a respect, but it's kind of like let's not be enemies today kind of thing. Like, you helped me, I helped you. We realize there's something bigger. I don't know. I mean, I can't, when you're as evil as Zod has been, I don't know if you're one that, like he says, maybe a new Krypton, but one that has learned from its past mistakes. I don't really know if he will. because then I can totally see it being where Superman is now going to have to go back and have another War of the Supermen kind of thing and just clash and do all that kind of stuff, which I won't like. But I will say that in terms of closure and leading, you know, this whole Unity saga and all that kind of stuff, I liked it because it felt closure, and I thought it, the closure at least was done well. Now, what happens going forward with possible rehashing of old stories and stuff like that, I don't know. But like that Jor-El stuff didn't bother me because that DC world is gone, and it's been gone for a while. So it's kind of, there's no point of holding on to it because you're not getting it back, unfortunately. And maybe that's why so many people get so upset, because I can let things go really quickly because I'm accepting it. I'm not going to be holding on to this and being angry, because I'm only hurting myself and my own psyche for being upset for something that's not going to come. Might as well just roll with it, or just don't read it whatsoever. And you know, that way works too.
See, it's really sad that I have to compare myself to these people, but I'm basically the guys that refused to read Superman because he didn't wear the red underwear outside of his uniform. I'm like, I don't feel that the Superman or action book is up to par at all to how it's been. Like, they completely made a downgrade. And so I, like, it sucks to say it, but this will be, like, because for a while, I gave Bendis a chance. I bought 9 issues of each book. I told myself, 9 issues. That is, could potentially be anywhere from 2 to 3 arcs. And it's only been one story that made no difference whatsoever with the Superman character at all. So, like, it's been pointless. So, I mean, I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Well, I mean, it's not like I'm like, wow, this is groundbreaking stuff. But to say that it did nothing to the character, I don't think is fair.
For to be as big a name as Bendis, shouldn't it be groundbreaking with a character like Superman?
I mean, sometimes that's hard to say, because we're the ones that create the hype. You know what I mean? Like, for example, we listen to ESPN, and if ESPN tells me that this baseball player or this football player is going to be a future Hall of Famer, how the hell does that guy know what that player is going to be like in 7 years? But because we're buying into somebody's words, we create the narrative that if they don't match our narrative, then they were a failure. But they could have been, oh, this, his career had so much upside, but he was a disappointment. Nah, man, that guy played professional baseball for 20 years. He had a great freaking career, because some people can't even make it to the majors and they're in the minors for 30 years. So it depends on what narrative you're willing to believe. If you're going by, Bendis is coming, oh my God, he's going to... No, I'm going with, this is a Bendis who was already falling off. He's not the same. His Marvel stuff wasn't up to par anymore. He wanted a bigger role. Marvel's like, no, we're going with young blood, fresh ideas. We don't really need you anymore. So he went to DC. So I wasn't expecting Prime Bendis. If Bendis was coming during Ultimate Spider-Man, Dark Avengers, yeah, you're damn right, I would be pumped. And I would have more hype. But I'm going into a guy that was just released. That's like seeing an athlete, let's say like David Justice, was getting paid like $15 million to play for the Yankees. They gave him $12 million to go away. So any team, yeah, any team that signs him, I mean, you're not getting the $15 million. I mean, he's not what he was if a team is willing to give him $12 million to go away. So I'm not expecting groundbreaking. I'm expecting just a, you know.
Speaking of that type of situation,
I had to go sports. That's the only way I can.
Yeah, but did you hear about John Byrne?
John Byrne, I did not.
Okay, everybody knows John Byrne because, you know, of course.
I mean, 90 Superman. Deal. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, yeah. He signed an exclusive deal with Image.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't even know he was still writing.
Yeah, neither did I. Found that out last week. He is doing like a big project, and he's going to be announcing it at New York Comic Con.
Hmm. I mean, those are scary, because that's like, you know, everyone gets excited about Claremont, but he sucks now.
Well, the thing is, like, let's just make this clear. Byrne, and this is going to sound really hilarious, John Byrne burned all of his bridges for Marvel and DC.
Yes.
Like, he has been very vocal about that as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, about to sneeze here. But with him going to Image, I'm curious. I'm not necessarily excited and, like, pumped, but I'm just like,
I can't. I see that, and I'm thinking, like, this is like the Neil Adams. Like, oh, Neil Adams writing a new Batman. No, that's going to sound super old. I don't find it that it's going to feel any way relatable. That's going to be like, man, if you liked John Byrne during, because John Byrne did Superman, but didn't he also, oh no, that was Peter David, the really long Hulk run that he did Hulk for like hundreds of issues. Yeah, so I'm like, eh. I those names, they mean something to my past. I don't think they're going to mean anything to my future, so whatever.
Yeah.
So.
I don't know, it's just like, with everything that's been happening with Bendis, I was excited for Bendis to come over because of what I had read in the past with Bendis, of course, being Ultimate Spider-Man and Dark Avengers, like you had said. And I hadn't really kept up.
Like his Daredevil. Have you read his Daredevil? Like, it's great.
I've not read Daredevil.
His Daredevil's amazing. Like, it's really good.
I was hoping that with new characters, Superman, Batman, you know, characters that he hasn't been able to play with, I was hoping that it would bring fresh ideas and something really exciting, and it has not been exciting or fresh at all. So,
well, like, I mean, if I would say it's fresh in the sense that no one has ever tackled trying to do something like with a Krypton and trying to create like a United Nation. It might not be, it's not sexy, but I feel like in terms of if you want to look at grand scope macro things, it's a pretty big deal. It's just it's not exciting.
But, and I have to think of this in a real world sense, how long do you think that's going to last?
In comics, the next issue maybe?
Like,
I mean, if he was leaving the title, I would say it might not mean anything, but I feel that if Bendis is doing something where he's revealing Superman's identity, then I feel like he's still in it for a long haul.
But that's the thing I'm talking about. The thing with New Krypton, already been done. The thing with Superman's identity, already been done. He is hitting all the bases of things that have already been done with the character just to say, oh, I'm going to do my own little spin on it, and then he doesn't do a spin on it, and the last panel will be something that he introduces. Like, it's just going to be that's what he does. He waits until the last page or the last issue to do something, and he's like, oh, I'm the greatest writer ever. Okay, let's move on to the next issue. And it doesn't hit me. Like, I feel like it should, and it's just very
disappointing. I mean, I think it's hard. I don't think that he should have been on a book big, like a big, big book at first. I think that maybe he should have done more of the smaller stuff, like do his Young Justice.
He should have done Titans, or not Titans, Teen Titans. That's what I feel like he would have been best.
I mean, if he did something, because, I mean, what he's going through right now is kind of like how a lot of, I mean, I don't want to bring the movie people because that's just nuts. But it's kind of like when you're jumping into how people feel about Man of Steel, you know, you either, you know, you can love the fresh new look, or kind of like what you're saying is it doesn't feel new, it doesn't feel fresh, or I love my own version of it. And, you know, kind of like a Reeve, like this is just not a Superman that you're interested in. I just feel like he's going into something that has so much history that it's kind of, I mean, when you've had a character with over, you know, 1,000 issues on just one title, I mean, it's hard to do something new. It's more like you got to rehash something, but kind of make it clever. I mean, that's pretty much what comics is now.
But to make it as obvious as some of the stuff that's already happened in the last...
Yeah, but New 50, but years? New 52 doesn't count. So, like, him revealing himself.
Why does it not count? It exists. I have it in my case right now. I can pull it out right now. It exists.
It exists. Like, but then
it's already happened. If that was the case, then nothing prior to today should matter.
Not necessarily, because if we're going by like Wally West and like his children, technically, if we're going technical, his children don't exist. They exist in our hearts because we've read it, but in that world and all that stuff doesn't matter anymore. The majority of New 52 doesn't matter anymore. Everything that you loved post-crisis, pre-Crisis on Infinite Earth, that doesn't matter anymore. Silver Age, Superman, who cares? That's not a thing anymore. I mean, if we're going by that, those are the facts. Now, we don't have to go by them, but then you're not necessarily playing by the rules. So, yes, this Superman, yes, sure, he has revealed himself. Okay, Lois did it, but that's in a world that doesn't matter anymore. So it's kind of, does it suck that that's more DC's fault for having that they've been failing and not keeping a freaking vision where they have to keep on retconning all their ideas? Because then when now you're in a new world and you want to bring that up, you get attacked for rehashing something. But technically, in the world that we're living in, no one knows that Clark is Superman. So it sucks because it is a boring idea. But in the world of DC comics that we're reading right now, no one knows. So what happened 4 years ago, that doesn't matter. With Gene Wong, I want to say. I don't remember. I think it was like during the powers, when he lost his powers after the solar flare thing. So, I don't know, man. Anyways. Lex Luthor is out on a mission, and he's trying to eliminate all the Luthers all throughout the multiverse.
Dude, I will say, I got excited for this because it reminded me of the one issue of Dark Knight's Metal. Do you remember that? When all of the Lex Luthers were saving... Superman,
mm-hmm.
In the Dark Multiverse.
Yep.
That got me really excited.
I got excited because it was Jason Latour and Brian Hitch.
Yeah.
Well, Brian Hitch on art, not writing.
Yeah. The darkness.
Yeah.
The darkness. But the Brian Hitch, you know, getting on the, or stepping off of the hype train from when he was on Hawkman to immediately get back on for a multiverse story like this was really, really fun. You know, I was skimming through this and I got to read about half of it this morning. This was a really cool book. You know, it sets up some, you know, we always think of Lex Luthor now as this very just evil alien-esque, you know, Manhunter Lex Luthor. But before this,
he's kind of like Perpetua's Desaad.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
But before this, when he was just a regular run-of-the-mill villain facing Superman, he was a planner. He described everything as a game of chess.
Mm-hmm.
This is him playing chess
against himself.
Against himself, and it is awesome. I love it. The reveal at the end makes things very interesting with how the War of Justice and Doom will go. It makes it very interesting to see how, you know, the entire story of Lex Luthor will go on its own. So I'm really excited to see the outcome. And this may not even play with Snyder's run at all, to be honest, because this is technically a one shot. You know, Snyder can break the rules if he wants to and say, hey, I'm not going to play with this at all. But
I mean, I can see that being the case, but I think with it being on the banner, and Lex has been one of Scott's biggest, like the Riddler one with Mark Russell, I don't really think Scott pays too much attention to. But I think when you're doing this one specifically, and I'm not sure if this is the last one of these one shots of the villains, I would say that this one would probably be the one that especially because of that little Easter egg at the end, I feel that this would be one that probably plays the most to, like, Scott. I think maybe Scott maybe did have some say, because this is really the Lex Luthor, Apex Lex Luthor, is going from different Earths to different Earths, confronting different forms of himself. And you get to see a kind of like a little sneak peek of, you know, one was like a cobbler, Are cobblers the ones making shoes?
Yes.
Yeah, so he's like, some are cobblers. Some is a little boy where he still has like the red head, but this version, Lionel Luthor, is a drunk and he meets him. Which, that's the one that's worth following, because that's the one that Lex actually takes with him along this journey of going from all these different Earths. We saw a Lex Luthor that was like a Doom Lex. I think that was Earth 45, where he's confronting this Doom Lex. It gives him you know, these powers and this knowledge, because it looks like there is a Lex, and who is, I'm assuming, he's gay, because his partner, he said that his partner, and I believe his partner was Cal, and it was a Superman. So Lex in this Earth of 32, he was like the Batman and Cal was the Superman, but they were together, and he was able to rip that from him. You go later on to, I'm trying to see what was the next Earth, because there were multiple Earths here. There was another Earth, freaking A, too many books, Earth 50. And you see them kind of like if it was Washington, D.C., but instead of it being like the Lincoln Memorial, it's actually a Luther Memorial. And he's actually just explaining a little bit to the boy, like, why is it the reason? And it's all about because there can only be one Luther. Like, all these other Luthers. So he's literally just trying to eliminate all of them. They go to Earth 44. You see the cobbler. But then what's interesting is that they go to Earth 47. And it's, it says, always then. And that's where you get the most, because this looks like, and I was explaining it to you for those who read Marvel, like Donny Cates' Thanos Wins, where you have the Thanos, the young Thanos of wanting all the power and everything, and then you get to see, like, old man Thanos, kind of like he's realized everything that's going on, is it for naught? Like, have I been wasting my life? And that's kind of like where it seems like to him, and he's the one that I feel, even though Lex, because Lex is not going to admit it, I feel that he, in a way, got to Lex. And I think the reason why he got to Lex is because everything, and I won't say it, I want you guys to read it, but everything that he did say to Lex is true. It's just not something that, you know, Lex will ever say out loud. And there's actually a great panel that shows that he's like, listen, I've had all the power in the world. I've had all the capabilities of all this kind of power. And you see him as Shazam. You see him as Lex Luthor as Hawkman. You see Lex Luthor as Dr. Fate. I even think like Jonah Hex, you see him with a family as Brainiac, as the Flash. There are, as Superman, because you see him wearing like the John Henry Irons, like the steel suit, it looked like. Actually, no.
Yeah.
That's the rebirth. The rebirth Lex. So you're seeing a lot of those moments, and he goes, and it's no surprise that the boy, he's like, you mastered, he goes, it's no surprise that the boy finds you very impressive, Lex. He's like, you mastered fooling yourself long ago. And he's like, I've seen him in the visions, you know. And he's mentioning, like, all these kind of powers. He's like, no. He's like, save me, Superman. And when he's actually talking to the little boy, Alexander, and he's kind of, like, saying, like, shield yourself in a way from all these kind of gifts. Well, that boy actually ends up killing the old man, Lex. And that's when the Apex Lex actually blesses that boy and gives him the powers, where you see him in the small, like the classic Lex Luthor battle suit with the bald head. But what you see at the very end is that Apex Lex puts him like in a cryo chamber, and right under it, it says Lex Luthor human DNA backup, where it kind of teases where it looks like this Lex Luthor knows either. The way I see it is that between the stuff that we've seen with Martian Manhunter and Lex Luthor about that there is humanity in Lex, are we going to get a redemption like that? You know, the villains, sometimes they want that one little last heroic, like, I realize what I've done, but he dies. And you're like, oh man, Lex, that was so nice. But then what's here growing in this chamber is all the evilness. So, like, you're going to get right back to the evil Lex, but just as a young boy growing up. But like, that's what I think. Or Lex is just going to die and you think it's over because people are, most won't read this story.
Yeah.
Because it's a one shot and not many people give one shots a try. Or, you know, you get like a nice redemption, but, well, at least a last one little glimpse. So we'll see if this shows that Lex actually is a human after all, even in this evil, you know, shell of the Apex Lex that we're getting. So I thought it was, I mean, a really nice, these Year of the Villains. I mean, I didn't read the Sinestro one because I didn't care, but like the Black Mask one, the Riddler one, I feel like there was another one before Black Mask that was like a really good character study. Or maybe it was just Black Mask.
Yeah, I think it was just Black Mask because Sinestro was the first one. Joker is coming out soon, I think.
Okay. So, yeah, man, I thought it was a really strong, strong issue. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Yeah.
So, man, this is freaking long.
And I think that's a wrap, man.
That's a wrap.
Dude. An hour and 30 minutes. It's been a while since we have had an episode like this.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we interfaced. So, with that being said, you can find me on Twitter at Mark Reads Comics and find us at the Comic Book Legion at CB_Legion. If you're interested in being a contributor on the website, hit us up. Either you can DM us there or email us at comicbooklegion@gmail.com. Clay, where can they find you?
You can find me at Fanboy Clay on Twitter and on Instagram. Of course, you can also find the other show that I have, Fanboy Comics Pod, on Twitter. The actual podcast is called Fanboy Comics Podcast, but that's the handle. That's the word I'm looking for. And I have one episode with Juice from the Box, the YouTuber/streamer that has been a guest on this show. We talked about Hush for that season 3 episode 1. I have a season 3 episode 2 coming out pretty soon. I actually have to record it with Mark. It's a little surprise for what book we're going to be talking about. It's going to be really fun.
It's Bendis related.
Dude, I went through that volume 1 because we talked about doing volume 1. I went through that volume 1 in like 20 minutes. I was consumed in that thing. And
it's amazing how strong that story was at the beginning, where there's not much dialogue going on, but the storytelling is just fantastic.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
But there's a small little tease there. But that show is going to be on Anchor. So please go download the Anchor app. There's a really cool thing where you can send voice messages to me. I want to put them on the show. I want to interact with people. I want to make a community with that. So please go do that. I am going to be relaunching season 1 and 2 onto that show as well. And I'll be talking a little bit about what those episodes were about as well. So yeah, that's going to be all that. Mark already said everything about the show and how to contact us. They also have a fantasy football show as well.
Oh, crap. I forgot about that one.
Been keeping up with that. Sorry, one. Jake. I've been listening to it. I am learning a little bit about that stuff. I'm not big into the sports anymore. So it's cool to get some lingo out there.
But, absolutely.
What is the...
yeah, you can find us at FFL Pod, which is the Fantasy Football Legion. So, I mean, since we are nerds, so we do throw a lot of little nerdy concepts in there, even though we're talking sports. So in this past issue, there were certain elements with a certain football player who has, with Antonio Brown when he signed with the New England Patriots. But since that's a very sensitive topic, we didn't really want to discuss it, so I was just calling him Voldemort because he who shall not be named. So that's pretty you'll get little nerdy teases in there, just because I mean we're nerds as well as just sports fanatics. And I mean I would listen to us, you know. I only went 4-0 this week in fantasy. I mean I kind of know what I'm doing. Anyways, so with that being said, we'll talk to you guys next week and we appreciate it. See ya.
All right, see ya.